Hey everybody, Paul Brooks here from B-Movie Mania. We're going to jump into the episode in just a minute, but real quick I wanted to tell you about a brand new t-shirt that we have for sale over at store.bmoviemania.com. It is the Alexandra Daddario is Daddy t-shirt.
Alexandra Daddario is Daddy.
Alexandra Daddario is Daddy. Everybody knows this. There's no denying it. And here's the deal. Is she an actor who is in the movie that we are about to review today? No. Is she an actor in a movie that we have ever reviewed on this podcast? I don't think so. Honestly, I don't think so. Does it matter? No.
She's your daddy.
It doesn't matter if you've seen her films or not. Have you seen her eyes? That's all you need to know.
Don't ask questions, just accept it.
Store.bmoviemania.com, Alexandra Daddario is Daddy t-shirt. Thank you so much, and please enjoy our review of Adam Green's Aladdin right now on B-Movie Mania.
This is a very special podcast. Maniacs discover things here, low-budget things. Underneath this mic is the stuff that makes up everything. You know, the real B stuff. Something I learned back in the day when I was talking real fast in Tupelo. We start by globing the audio, then cubing the globe, and finally, triangulating the cubic globe. Me, Rama, B-Movie Mania!
B-Movie, B-Mania!
Welcome to the crossroads of camp, the bastion of the bizarre, the place where low budgets meet high praise. Yes, it's B-Movie Mania. And now, B-Movie Maniacs, here are your hosts, the cream of the crap, the connoisseurs of cult, your cinematic creepy uncles, Paul Brooks, Mike Hayes, Jason Hulls, and Crazy Chris Hudson.
Hello and welcome, everyone out there in B-Movie Mania world. I am your host tonight, Michael. I print a bunch of shit, Hayes. And with me tonight, as is always with me, are my favorite B-Movie Maniacs, Jason Hulls.
Sometimes I wish I just aimed for the toilet. Then I could have really done something with my life.
Paul Brooks.
Hi, I'm 15-year-old.
And crazy Chris Hudson.
Call me Prince Average Cabbage tonight. Mm.
Okay. All right. We will.
Yes.
Hey, you all you little perverts. That's another line. Anyway. Hi, guys. How's it going?
Good.
Yeah,
how about
okay.
you?
Okay.
All right. I'm doing great. I am, well, I'm a little actually worried because we watched a little thing called Adam Green's Aladdin, and normally we have a little chat in our chats about stuff. People throw up a little things here and there, and it has been fucking radio silence.
Yeah, you should
no
be
No one
worried,
has said
Mike.
A goddamn word about anything of this movie, so I'm a little worried. About what the feelings of everyone's going to be. Or maybe I know exactly what they're going to be from everyone.
I have a way to sum this up, what I think is about to happen, but I don't know if you want me to do it yet.
Jay, why don't we do a quick take of the episode real quick on your end?
I think I'm going to go out on a limb here. I don't know for sure, and I could be very wrong. But I think we may have found Mike's bad chicken, guys.
Bad chicken. I'm a bad chicken.
Okay, now let's get actual quick takes.
Quick takes!
Chris Hudson, what's your quick take?
Mike, to quote Adam Green, in his most famous role as Aladdin. Damn it, I can't say it. This is the best part of the movie right here. My disappointment is like a third party between us.
Paul Brooks.
This movie is the most Mike Hayes shit of all time.
I hope that's Mike's quick take too.
Jason Hulls.
I made an AI watch Aladdin, some porno, and a high school play and spit out a script and make me a frittata. Mike, what's your quick take?
My quick take is this is the most Mike Hayes shit I've ever seen.
Thank you.
Oh, fuck. All right. Well, This has all been already confusing, and nothing is going to make any more sense for anyone else in this goddamn episode. But
I have questions.
Let's start with those then. Who needs to describe the plot of the film?
Can I just ask some questions before we do that?
Yeah, let's ask some questions.
Okay. Who's Adam Green?
Adam Green is one of the people from Moldy Peaches.
What is Moldy Peaches?
It's a band.
This is the most Mike Hayes shit of all time.
You all know Moldy Peaches. You all love at least one of their songs when they got brought back. They were featured in the Juno soundtrack. They were very hot around when that came out.
Yeah, I love
but
Juno.
They were already like disbanded before that. Wow. I've never seen Juno. I don't know, but I know the soundtrack was hot around
there. I remember liking Juno well enough for the time.
Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah.
Wow. I feel like that's probably a movie that holds up pretty well. The guy who hasn't seen it, says the guy. But hey, that's what it is.
It's got themes. It's got a structure. It's fine. It's a fine movie. There's nothing wrong with Juno.
Which it's kind of like the exact opposite of Adam Page's Aladdin, if you think about it.
Adam Page's Aladdin.
Adam, I don't know why I'm thinking Adam Page.
That's perfect.
No, that's basically
AEW
champion Adam Page remade.
Aladdin's about to do some cowboy shit.
I don't know why I keep getting the two confused. I mean, Adam Page has a lot of paper mache in his ring.
Well, if this helps out,
he's got pointy boots.
Adam Green,
because he wants to look down and see pointy boots.
I'm sorry, Mike.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Mike.
So to really answer the question, is Adam Green seems to have started his professional career as a musician in the early 90s, did this Moldy Peaches and solo stuff for a while as an anti-folk group in New York, and then that disbanded, and he started just doing art and, like, touring the world and doing, like, things in fancy places and doing fancy art stuff. He also created a art collective with Macaulay Culkin and Toby Goodshank. And then also he has another feature film, which is it is called The Wrong Ferrari. And this is going to explain a lot for this movie. This came out in 2011. And so this movie is called The Wrong Ferrari. And the project, shot entirely on an iPhone, was written, directed, and performed by Adam Green, who claims to have conceived it under the influence of ketamine.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That checks out.
And that last sentence really explains a lot about his Aladdin film. Paul, do you got the plot of the film?
I do. This is actually something on IMDb that was written by Adam Green himself, so should be fairly accurate.
All right.
Unless he was on ketamine when he wrote this. Who knows?
Yeah, it's still pretty
accurate.
Maybe that's
double accurate.
Adam Green's Aladdin is a hypersensory, poetic, and humorously modern take on the Arabian Nights classic tale, revolving around Aladdin's dysfunctional family who live in an average American city ruled by a corrupt sultan with a decadent socialite daughter. The film explores themes of technology, government repression, greed, and true love.
Excuse me, Paul?
Yes.
Did you say humorously somewhere in that description?
Well, no, it's humorously modern.
Oh, humorously modern.
Did you say
modern.
Explores okay. themes?
That is the word that it says here.
So with that description, which sounds like someone already sounds like someone on drugs trying to make a thing. Not trying, but describing a thing they did actually make. Speaking of making, let's talk about the budget of this movie. Do you guys see this?
I did not.
it was a Kickstarter, mm-hmm. right? He wanted to make this. He made a Kickstarter. And so the budget for this film is $51,815.
Okay.
Wow.
That's about right.
Most of which went into cardboard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of the actors in it did it for very cheap or free.
I would assume that, a lot of the people in this movie are, you know, somewhat big actors who are part of SAG-AFTRA and all that stuff. So, yeah, I would imagine there would be some people donating their time to this. Why?
Yeah,
I have no idea.
Those people that you refer to are Macaulay Culkin, Natasha mm-hmm. Lyonne, Alia Shawkat. I know there's like the painter, he was the genie, right? I don't know.
Oh, yeah. Very famous painter.
Zoe Kravitz, although I don't think Zoe Kravitz is really big when this was made. She's a much bigger name now.
That's true.
Is she in this movie?
Yeah.
Zoe Kravitz is in this movie.
As who?
As a miner who prints a goddamn asparagus chair, Jay.
Yeah.
Come on.
Oh.
Yeah, I don't think she's in it much.
Okay.
She's got like two scenes, but she's got a couple lines, and she does print an asparagus chair. So
she does.
It's kind of an asparagus chair,
of course. Yes. Okay.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
All right.
And of course, we have to mention, what is her name? Bip Ling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Bip Ling.
Who I'm not familiar with.
She's a big blogger, or was, and then has become a fashion icon and a musician and all this kind of stuff in a very
anti-folk way.
I mean, I her music, I wouldn't say, sounds like the anti-folk thing that I've heard.
I have more questions. Do you want to keep going, or you want me to ask more questions?
Well, that's all this is going to be.
Right.
So, like, we're not going over the damn plot. It's the plot of Aladdin. If you don't know it, figure it out yourself.
Right.
It's, you know.
Mike, how did you discover this movie?
Okay. So, this is a very natural way of discovering it. I was
Ketamine.
Looking for the, like, just as many entries in fan fiction, fan films I could find, right? So I'm looking through a lot of stuff. I'm typing in a lot of things, you know, and I type in Aladdin fan film or something, and this shows up. And while it is not by any means a fan film of Disney's Aladdin or, I mean, that's really the main...
Oh, it's not?
You know.
Oh, this changes everything.
Well, wait,
oh,
hold on a second.
There's a couple references, but I look at it that way, and so I see this, and I put it on my list for that. But I'd seen a little bit. I scrubbed through all the fan films I find, and you know, I scrubbed through them a little bit to see what it looks like. Looks interesting. We'll talk about the look of this in a second. But then one night, I'm over at Describe Fear HQ with hosts,
mm-hmm.
and we are, I will say, we are very high. And I decide I'm going to put something on the screen, muted, just something on the screen. I just want to put this on, but no sound. I just want to because I know it's colorful and weird looking. So I put it on, and we're continuing our night. But I think about 20 minutes through that, we just decide we have to turn on the volume and stop talking and actually watch it. And the rest is history.
Okay, so that was the first time you watched it, and I know for a fact mm-hmm. that you watched it last night as well mm-hmm. with your roommate, and you had a little Caesar's pizza, correct?
Yes, 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 yes.
So you've seen the movie twice.
I've seen the movie probably about five or six times.
Oh, my God.
What?
This is the most Mike Hayes shit ever.
This movie, and we're going to go into it for a second. Paul, tell me I'm wrong. But Paul and I, we like to throw a lot of parties, well, we used to. And we'd like to put something muted on the background of a screen.
Mm-hmm.
Just in a room.
Sure.
Tell me this isn't a great thing to have just as something weird on the TV screen.
Yes.
I will tell you that it's probably a lot better muted. I will give you that. That's for sure.
Bingo. Yes, I will second that.
Although given the option, if I'm having a party and I need something on the TV, it's not going to be Aladdin over... But come on, you knew
that.
Wow,
that got bleeped out for some reason. That was weird. But Jay, then, if Paul's going to say this, Jay, you said yes. Like, it would be interesting... To
yeah.
be muted on it. He was going.
Yeah, like, I'll drop some a little nuggets of my final answer review. Talking about the look of the movie, it is 100% cardboard and paper mache. That aesthetic, like
yes.
And I did watch most of the behind the scenes thing that you sent me, so I am a little familiar with how he put this thing together. I will give them credit for committing so hard to the look of the movie. That is not my, and I will save it for later. That is not my main problem with this movie. I will commend them for committing to the look and the aesthetic that they committed to, which is, again, all paper mache, hand-painted stuff. Like, all the props are cardboard or paper mache, everything. Even some of the costumes.
Yeah, clearly they put a lot of creative energy and a lot of effort into building the world and building the look of the movie.
Paul, did you watch the behind the scenes, Paul?
No.
Okay. It is baffling the amount of work that went into what you saw in this. It's
baffling. I mean,
it's very creatively done, I'd say, also. Very, very cleverly done.
I mean, that's how I felt 5 minutes into
what he does. The question is it good?
well, no, but the process, like, is... Yeah. So you, when you watch it, you see these rooms and whatnot that have obvious panels that have been painted on, and they're all this, like, cartoonish-looking art on it, and you can see the lines of the panels. Like, they're just there. Mm-hmm. And apparently the way they did it is, because they only had $51,815, they rented a small studio space where they could make this room, and then they Velcroed the panels on the walls and then could take them off and put new ones on. And they cataloged them all in this insane library of cardboard squares that they could then take them out and put the room back together when they needed, if they needed that room again or that look again. And it's absolutely wild.
All right. Can I address the elephant in the room here? Because we've danced around one thing here. Okay. We're talking about the look of the movie. There's art and there's depth. And we've said this would be great muted. Okay.
Uh-huh. Well, you know what? Well, before we go into it, I do want to say that I thought the music was actually worthwhile.
Okay. Well, he's a musician. I did enjoy the music. That's good.
So, yeah. So,
but the main thing, the main reason I believe we are saying it's better muted on a TV at a party, and we respect, or some of us respect, the work that's gone into the design of it, is because the script is atrocious.
Oh,
let's
God.
Just get it out there. The script, the way it is written, is awful. It's terrible. It is.
It's so good.
It is.
Let me. Okay. It's fucking awful.
It tries. They try so hard.
Jay does not curse very often on this podcast.
Exactly.
So.
That's why I want to be real clear here about my feeling. Like, the if they had written this in a way that you could follow it, that made you care about anybody in the movie, or you could even just sit back and watch it without scratching your head, it would be something, I think.
Here's what's frustrating to me. I don't think it's a case where it was just inept people trying to write something. Everything that is in the movie is done with a purpose. It's written that way on purpose, which is even worse, because it's like that's what they landed on. That's what they decided to do.
Right. And it is, you'll get a, okay, so like, let me try to summarize it. Like,
I think maybe Mike should put a clip in.
What? Yeah, a clip is better.
We all fight for privacy and we all lose the fight. The virtual reality show, it's a pornography of the soul. But then again, just a few days ago, you were famous and broke.
They're gonna throw me in debtor's prison.
Human life on Earth is purgatory, so don't be surprised when purgatory doesn't stop.
So we think that pornography is an aspect of purgatory?
And so is technology. One day we will all be naked again through technology.
Sometimes it makes me wish there was a technology-limiting machine.
Till we are naked and alien, it's a purgatory. So this is what mainlining your dreams looks like.
In here, we all look like what's right next to us.
The lamp connects to a frequency of Wi-Fi that mushrooms tap into. Fungus is a space-age material.
So the lamp is basically a mushroom.
Even Jesus was a little bit of a mushroom. And at Nintendo, we've been developing digital mushrooms for quite some time. Within 100 years, assuming we live in an average universe, humans will be contacted by aliens. And during that time, we'll have evolved ourselves into a technofungal insect species.
If they're going to start reinventing humans, they should really start at the back in the spine area.
Human beings are basically insects wrapped in pigskin.
So our culture is more of a yeast after all.
Technology is ushering in a neoclassical age. These columns of data, tablets, icons, and graffiti are a continuation of the Roman arts. Reappropriated ideals have formed the basis for a monolithic social sculpture that is greater than the pyramids, the Parthenon, the Colosseum, Disney World. All man-made wonders combined. Have you ever even wondered why Mario is Italian?
Here's something. Why are we symmetrical vertically but not horizontally?
We actually don't look anything like what we think we do. The lamp is five-dimensional. In the five-dimensional view of things, we are all one person. One great person with invisible string connecting all of our hands. All our hands are actually the same hand.
So what I'm hoping these clips will illustrate is that there's a kernel of a thought as characters are interacting, and then at random points in time, either from the first character or the people they're talking to, there's just gibberish. And even if it's not gibberish, it comes across like gibberish. It comes across like somebody is saying every third sentence they think. And it's impossible to follow in any meaningful way, which to me kills the drama, makes me not care about anybody, and then I tune out. And fast. Like, this particular brand of absurdity dies for me very quickly.
Well, here's... Okay, let me... This is why I think I really appreciate it after watching it the second time, because I had watched the behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
And no, I'm not saying anything. Jay, you said you didn't quite finish it. But the first half of it's a little more fluffy, and the second half of it kind of, it's not that long, but
I mean, I saw like 10 or 12 minutes of the 15 minute.
Okay,
thing.
So you just missed a little bit of it.
A little bit.
Green describes the process of writing, like, the dialogue in it. And I'm not saying this makes it more enjoyable for anybody, but it shed a light on me in terms of why it's a certain way. Is he wrote it as lyrics to a song. And mm-hmm. So it's all lyrical kind of writing. And it doesn't rhyme by any means, dear listener. Like, it's just... But it's like this, it's disjointed. Like, you can have a line in a song and then you can have another line in a song and they like only sort of relate to each other. So it's very disjointed when you listen to it. It's very seemingly, it is absurd. But that's kind of apparently the headspace of the creator.
And
I'm not saying it makes it any more enjoyable for anyone. Not anyone should be like, oh, that's the case. I like it more. No, I'm in no way saying that. I'm just saying when I heard that, I'm like, oh, that makes sense to why it's this fucking weird gibberish language stuff that's going on.
Can I bring up a point, though, that just absolutely was baffling for me?
Yes.
So it's interesting to me, Mike, that you have... you know, kind of given the background here of, okay, they rented this studio space, they Velcroed everything to a wall, right? Okay, that all makes sense. Why did they have to then ADR every line of dialogue in the entire movie?
Well, if you'd watched the behind the scenes, you'd hear that the audio in there is absolute horseshit.
Oh, Jesus. Well, then find a different space. It's unbelievable to me that, number one, there are, you know, some pretty famous people in this movie who agreed to be in the movie, and then B, had to go into a sound booth again to redub all of their audio.
Well, Paul, there's one big actor who didn't return for the ADR, and that's whoever played 15-year-old.
Oh.
Dude, favorite character in the film. There's a kid named 15-year-old. Yeah. Like, Macaulay Culkin is like, okay, thank you, 15-year-old. And then when Maybe shows up and she's like, hi, you know, let me join the Magic Americans. Then he's like, yes, hi, I'm 15-year-old.
Like, that's the only time
I think
laughed.
I laughed pretty good four times in this movie. And that's one of the laughs.
Well, the bad news is that Magical America's bankrupt. We're completely broke.
Give us some good news, Ralph.
Well, 15-year-old, the good news is that ultimately we're all working for the internet. Preventing the Sultan and the CIA from seizing control of e-history is one way to subvert the doom spiral. Yet, we have no resources.
I'll do whatever I need to do to aid in that. Hi, I'm Emily. I'm a fan.
Hi, I'm 15-year-old.
What did work? Give me one aspect you liked about this.
Fair.
Okay?
Yeah.
Chris, what do you think worked best for you in this?
Honestly, Uncle Gary was fucking great. I love Uncle Gary is definitely easily the best character for me. Played by the same actor who played the fucking Sultan, the grandson of God, who is probably the worst character.
Okay.
That's great. That's fair.
Can I go next?
Yes, Jay. Please tell me something that worked for you within this film.
The storage eunuch.
Yeah. Okay, I laughed at that too. Yeah.
What's the storage eunuch, Jay?
The storage eunuch is, I believe he's a part robot as well, right? So he's a eunuch robot that has a clear, looks like plexiglass box over his crotch, where his crotch would be, that you can store things in, like your car keys.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was pretty funny.
The storage eunuch actually, having seen this a bunch of times, this tonight's review for me actually kind of connected a bunch of weird shit for me, which I know shouldn't take this long to figure out and whatever. But like, so at near the beginning of the movie, that one of the Magic American protesters, they bring in and they like zap him in an electric chair, which I think is the first time we see not just all the paper mache and cardboard, but actual CGI similar effects on top of it. And they zap him for claiming he had a big dick, even though he didn't, because we find out that the Sultan is intimidated by such things. But he gets zapped, and then he gives this speech about how he, like...
I like everything. Some things I like a lot, and other things I just like.
Then the eunuch comes back, and then later in the movie, the eunuch says those exact same words. And so I think it's supposed to be the same guy. The same guy they turned into a robot to do the thing.
The storage eunuch.
Yeah. So Paul has his arms crossed and is not looking happy. So, Paul, can you please say something that worked about Adam Green's Aladdin for you?
I would say the thing that probably worked most for me, as a filmmaker, you know, it can often be difficult to find ways to... you know, like have access to certain locations or build sets that you want to. So I think that the whole cardboard look of the film was a creative way to get around that, I guess, you know, sort of be able to do whatever you want to in terms of these are the types of locations that we want to make in this movie, and we can make any of them because it's just all cardboard.
Yeah,
I agree with that too.
And speaking to that, just to you know, give a little background, Paul, every line on that thing was drawn by Adam Green. Every fucking line.
Not
was
surprised one bit.
Didn't he? Yeah, wasn't it like 70 sets or something he had to design?
Probably, I don't know the number. Yeah, but he had help from like you know people around to help fill in the colors and stuff like that. Speaking of the cardboard and then the look of the things again, because mostly what you think about this movie is the look, right? You noticed all the weird, similar totems and stuff throughout, right? Like, it's like five patterns throughout the entire movie where he apparently took things like Garfield, Odie, Big Bird, and some other things and turned them into these, like, ancient Roman-style, like, shapes, like squares and stuff, and then took those patterns, and that's what literally everything in the movie's made of. The crown that Princess Barbara wears, the walls, the baseball, I mean, everything is all just these same kind of patterns and colors. So it's extra weird, but I feel once you realize it, it kind of pulls it together, but also makes it weirder. I don't know.
The like we said, the amount of work here is pretty nuts. And even though I said I despise the script, like from watching the behind the scenes, it said he wrote hundreds of pages. And then had note cards with dialogue that he just enjoyed and put them together in some David Lynch mind logic way. And that's how he wrote the script and boiled all of that down to 95 pages. So, I'll respect the amount of work. And I thought the look of the film was interesting and could have been worked. My real big, like, just absolute killer for me is the script.
Yeah. And you know what? If you're going to put this much work into something and you're going to have big name talent in your movie and everything, it probably would have worked for me a lot better if it was an original story. I mean, you can kind of make the argument that they inject a lot of originality into the story, but obviously it's Aladdin. It's based on a pre-existing story. If they had, if he had written an original concept so that this thing was its own unique thing, I might have been able to get on board with it a little bit more, because watching it, I'm like, what?
Do you think that would have made it even harder, though? Like, would it have?
Yes.
Because you can't, you can bear, I mean, if you try, you can see the big picture of Aladdin there. So you kind of know the story. Can you imagine trying to follow something like this that you don't know what it's supposed to even be? Would that make it even harder?
I think this is probably a good time to go ahead and mention that I've never read Aladdin. I've never seen the Disney version of it. I have no frame of reference whatsoever.
Rating time.
All right, so we can't go through it all. It's Aladdin. There's variants and things change, and there's so much. I mean, I'm sure we could bring up a bunch of little things, and everyone have a little thing to say about something or whatever, but it's just so much. So if you're curious about what the fuck this is, watch the movie. It's on YouTube. It's on Vimeo. You know, check it out.
Not on Tubi. But,
no. It's on Amazon Prime, but not in the U.S., but whatever. The point is, we just got to do this. We just got to talk about what to rate it. And then the question is, what the fuck do we rate this, though? So this is going to bring us into the last little bit of discussion about the film. What do you guys think this should be rated as?
Plump and juicy little misters.
there are a lot of different ways you could, you know, there's a lot of little things in here that would make a good rating system.
Like, probably more than any movie we've ever watched.
How many flaccid inches of the Sultan's cock do you rate this? Like,
I'm trying to think.
Well, I wrote down 3D printed shit sandwiches, but
that's pretty good.
That's a good
one. All right. So Chris, in order to do that, you have to explain what that is, though.
God. Well, we've already talked about how the lamp isn't like a magical lamp. It's a 3D printer.
Yes.
But there's also shit sandwiches in several key scenes of this movie. And did they actually 3D print a shit sandwich? I think they did when they're on the flying rug.
The magic rug ride.
The magic rug ride. And they swoop down and give some innocent, like, miners, you know, they're mining their baseball diamonds.
Okay, that was a pretty good bit, though, right?
That was kind
of... are all baseball-looking players with pickaxes, and they keep hitting the ground, and little baseballs come out because they're mining baseball diamonds.
And the space... And they trade them for space bucks, which look like coins from Super Mario. A couple other Mario references.
Lots of Nintendo sounds.
Yeah. Is Adam Green a big, like, Mario fan?
I mean, I assume, because the production company, the recording company that Aladdin works for is called Zintendo.
Yeah.
And the
wrong Ferrari, there's like a magic mushroom, too.
Okay.
And Princess Barbara dresses like Mario to pass out more 3D printed magic lamps.
Oh, and the president, Twin Peaks is the president, does ask at one point, did you ever wonder why Mario was Italian?
Oh, yeah.
She's not, just to be clear, she's not the president on Twin Peaks. She's the president in this, and she's Darla. Darla?
Darla, yes.
Yeah, in Twin Peaks.
But she's the president in this.
Right.
But not of, like, a country. She's the president of Zintendo.
Yeah.
Yes.
Not to be... I hope that's not confusing to anyone. Okay, Hudson, so there's 3D printed... And just from a bakery. I think they come from a diner or bakery at some
something
point
like
and
that.
Bring a shit sandwich.
Yep.
Let's do 3D printed shit sandwiches. And Hudson, because you were the person to come up with this, you get to choose where in the order you want to give your thing. First, second, third, or fourth.
Do I get to pick who's first?
No, you get to pick where you want to go.
Well, I'm going to go second.
Okay. Then, Paul, let's just get this out of the way.
You're
first.
Yeah. Look, it wasn't for me, but clearly there are some people who this is for. I mean, he got some interesting people in his film, so you got to give him credit for that. He clearly has some sort of... following or fan base or at least friends, you know.
I mean, that's all the famous people in his movie are all like effectively fans and friends of his.
Right. It's very like Silver Lake, you know, fucking
oh, sure.
LA. Brooklyn, yeah, like that also, whole scene. Yeah. It just didn't work for me. And we've talked about why and we've talked about what worked. So I will simply say, I'll go 25 3D printed shit sandwiches.
All right. Chris Hudson.
All right. Also, absolutely did not work for me. In fact, I actively hated this movie while watching it the first time and actively hated it even more the second time. But there are a few redeeming features to keep this from the depths of Josh Kirby. I'm getting all the names wrong. Mm-hmm. And fucking Incredible Bulk, whatever. Ugh. Like I said, the music. I enjoyed the music. I think Adam Green is a pretty decent songwriter. His lyrics are ridiculous, but, you know, reminded me of another band I like. A little more vulgar, but I like the music. And Uncle Gary was pretty great. Harmar Superstar was kind of fun.
Oh, yeah, right, he's in there.
He's in that. And, but yeah, Adam Green, delete your face.
Boom.
30 wow. 3D printed shit sandwiches.
30.
All right. Okay, Jason Halls.
Yeah.
Bring us almost home.
Yeah. You know, again, I respect the amount of work that went into this and the amount of thought that went into this. I mean, as negative as I sound, I do feel like so much of it could have worked. Like, again, don't have a problem with the look of the film. Don't have a problem with what they were trying to do with the cardboard, the paper mache, and how weird they tried to go with it. That's all fine. But, you know, sometimes you swing hard and sometimes you miss hard. And the thing that I can't get over it is the way it was written. Didn't enjoy it. It made me tune out. It made me not care. I didn't see any actual drama in it that hooked me because of how it was written. Some people it might work for, and they might just enjoy the ride for what it was. Not for me. So I made it about 16 minutes before I was like, I don't know if I can stand this anymore. So I'm going to give it 16.
Wow.
Wow.
All right. Still Mike, better than Josh Kirby.
Mike, just reel it up for us, will you? Just pull the score up a little bit.
I remember very clearly saying, okay, I got to be an hour into this and like checking, you know, checking to see. And I was 35 minutes in. I'm like, oh boy.
And if it helps Mike at all, you know, we are strict about the don't talk about the movie beforehand. Paul sent me a photo of the face he was making while watching it, which is unheard of.
Oh, I love it.
Which you can see down below on bmoviemania.com.
Oh, I love it. Oh, I love that you guys went on this ride with me. Thank you for, you know, this is the fun of this show, is we all get to throw in weird shit that, you know, we find interesting or we find that we find. And, and this is nothing else than that. It is, it's a work of art.
It's a weird one.
It is.
I, though, thoroughly enjoyed the nonsensical dialogue. I, as is hammered home within the movie that time and time again, it's after modern, which makes it ironic, which doesn't mean it's good by any means, but that's kind of the point of a lot of the script, is that the ironic is what people are buying into as like, I don't, whatever. Anyway, it's what it is. But the thing is, I thoroughly fucking love this movie. It's not a surprise to any of you guys. So I've got three anchors tying me down, but I'm giving this goddamn thing a drum roll, please.
No.
99.
Oh, 99?
Yes, I fucking love it.
Oh, 90, my God.
It is love your it. Bad chicken. This is your bad chicken.
Yeah. Oh, I love this thing that. So much. Oh. They decapitate Macaulay Culkin in it. They fucking cut off Alia Shawkat's arm through paper mache. It's all fucking
and doves
wild.
Fly out.
Doves fly out. It's just fucking insane.
Well, to be fair, it kind of stuck with me after my first viewing. I don't know what it was. Maybe just the music got stuck in my head, but I started, after watching the behind the scenes, I started thinking, well, maybe this wasn't so bad. And then I watched it the second time.
You know, Mike, I will say I also, you know, because typically I don't have time to watch the movie twice. I'll try, but I often don't. But with this one, I watched it and I'm like, man, I didn't like that at all. And then I was thinking about it more and I'm like, man, but that was weird. Like, should I go back again? So I tried. Yeah. And I didn't make it all the way, but I was like, there is something to, like, it beckons you to try to watch it again, because you're like, what did I just see? Like, did I really see that?
It couldn't have been that bad, could
right,
it?
Exactly. Like, did I just eat a shit sandwich?
Yeah. We don't want a shit sandwich. Who gave us this shit sandwich? Yeah.
Yeah. Did I? What happened?
To speak to Chris, if you need a little bit of something still in there. I will say that the entire album is on Bandcamp.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so you could buy it. Tomorrow is Bandcamp Day at the day of recording of this.
Right, yeah.
So tomorrow, Bandcamp Day, all the profits go to the artist. I'm buying not only the album, but I'm going to get the fucking vinyl of this goddamn album tomorrow.
On the next episode of B-Movie Mania.
All right. What do we have coming up next?
Assume the position.
No.
What's that?
Detective Fox loves work and alcohol. After going to AA, his sponsor Chip becomes the main suspect in his investigation of a missing kid. Detective Fox also starts to believe that people are disappearing up Chip's butt.
Oh.
Boys, prepare your colon for... Butt boy.
Yep.
Oh, boy.
Yep. Here we go.
Is this a butt crack sequel?
I knew this was coming eventually.
Here it is. And we're going to need some butt experts to help us out. So next time on the show, we're going to be joined by Joe and Lamar from Perfect Turd Podcast.
Oh, hell yes.
Ooh. Yes.
Yeah.
Let my love burn you up. Let my love burn you up.
But boy, it's out there. It's on Tubi. It's on Vudu. It's on IMDb TV, Plex. There's more. You can find it in lots of different spots. So do it.
Get up that butt.
Mm-hmm.
Paul, I'm going to watch it right after I go to store.bmoviemania.com and buy me one of our cool shirts, including the new Jimmy Won the Tournament shirts. Made
or
out
pillow.
Of a non-fleshy penis.
Or a pillow.
And or a pillow. We have
or
pillows
mask.
And phone cases.
Are we
and
still
masks.
Wearing masks?
Yeah, we can. I mean, if you feel comfortable and want to wear a mask, get one off of our store. And you can say, well, Jimmy won the tournament in penis font. And so you can get that. You know, follow us on all the socials, B-Movie Mania and BMM Pod on Twitter.
Leave us a review. Nice review. Make us a frittata.
A frittata would be wonderful.
And you know what? Since we're having Perfect Turd on the show next time, make sure you check out their reviews on YouTube. They got a lot of fun little bite-sized reviews. A lot of them are like 10 minutes and under. So go check out Perfect Turd on YouTube.
They're easily digestible. And not just the length, but those boys as well.
Indeed.
All right, Mike, I got to go. I left my keys in the storage unit, and I got to get somebody to unlock
fair.
It.
That's fair.
All right, I'll see you guys later.
See
All
you,
right,
Jay.
Later.
Bye,
right,
Paul.
Bye, everyone.
Bye, Mike.
I'm
bye,
gonna go eat this shit. I'm going to go
dear
eat this
listener.
Shit sandwich.
Listen up, maniacs. Do you have a question or a comment? Would you like to send some bourbon to Uncle Lloydy? You can contact the gang on Facebook at B-Movie Mania. You can also drop them a line at bmoviemania.com. Reach out. Touch them. They're touching themselves. and they might just reach back. I'm Lloyd Kaufman saying, see you next time on B-Movie Mania. Woohoo!
Well, it's time to return to the fifth dimension.
What is dying like?
At first, death emerges from within like a blackened, burning insect springing out of your bones, filling up your body with the brightest fluorescent colors, till your body's filled to the brim. Language loses all meaning. Your mind is so fried from contemplating Googleplex that it gives way to fractals and complex abstractions. The fluorescents start to spin like a wheel. And that wheel carries you off towards oblivion.
The deathbed is a horrible hang.
Aladdin, you're a pretty cool guy considering you came out of my dick.
Oh, I'm on the computer now!
I love you, Dad.
That's nice.